This episode of the Pain Education Corner is sponsored by the Camella Foundation. The Camella Foundation is committed to relieving pain naturally using osteopathic healing principles. Here at the Camella Foundation, we envision a world where people achieve their maximum potential by being empowered with knowledge and skills to heal themselves and others. This information is to be used for educational purposes only, and not to be construed as medical advice. If you have any questions or concerns, please consult a licensed healthcare professional. Hello, it's Bill, the Knee Pain Guru, and welcome to the Pain Education Podcast brought to you by the Camella Foundation. Today, we have a special guest. He's actually a good friend and mentor of mine, Emmanuel Manolakakis, out of Toronto, Canada. And I would just like to jump into it and have Manny, as he's known, affectionately know him as, would like you to introduce yourself.
Yeah, man. Well, hello, Bill. First, thank you for having me on. It's wonderful to see you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I've always found you very knowledgeable and lots of great insight as it comes to pain and just rehab in general. I found you a wonderful resource for the last, 15 years, right? So it's been amazing, and I'm happy to be on the podcast and share some of my experiences and knowledge with everybody.
Yeah, so today we're going to focus on the value of using physical pain as a teaching tool. Sure. And I know in our past experience, we're coming at it from a martial arts perspective. So there's a level of pain coming at it from the martial arts perspective that it's part of training. Mm-hmm. However, what I'd like to pick your brain on today in terms of the podcast is how a person who's been suffering with chronic pain, which many martial artists suffer with chronic pain, but there are also people that aren't in martial arts that suffer with chronic pain, and how we could begin to dovetail that together to use physical pain as a teaching tool.
Well, yeah, 100%, Bill. Now, listen, yes, I've done martial arts for a long time, but the pain thing was almost separate of it. So I did martial arts when I was younger, and then I was also a competitive athlete. I did a lot of pretty rough sports, rugby being one of them, and that's where I actually ended up damaging myself in my 20s. I had busted up my right knee pretty bad, and basically, at that time, back in, let's say, the late 80s, early 90s, the surgery for knee was, I would say, barbaric. It's not as fine-tuned as it is right now. Nowadays, it's the enhancements and refinement is much more than what it was for me. For me, you're basically 6 months, you were in a cast, after the surgery, and then you had another 6 months of rehab. Which seems long, but that's what it was like from the beginning of the surgery till the end was quite extensive. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of pain, right? There's obviously pain, and then there's pain in the initial injury, and there's pain after the surgery, and then there's pain in rehabbing it. So each one of these stages had different pain. The rehab pain was the one that taught me the most. Okay, pain, I mean, there's just pain, it hurts, and you're going to get through it. But the rehab pain, you had to actually do something. If you wanted to get the range of motion and the flexibility back, it was going to hurt. And that was par for the course. Every day was pain. And when you go through pain as a necessary thing for that long, you become a better friend with it. You realize that I have to go through this, and you start to understand the difference between good pain and bad pain. And you really can, and I could feel it without a doubt. I could feel that even to this day without a doubt. And I had that lens even before I started my second half of my martial art career. And when I started that and I started training, because I had started martial arts before, I stopped, and then I started it after. When I started it the second time, after my year-long break, it was with a recovered knee, but you still had the memory of that injury. It was still, there was still a lot of psychological trauma. And that's when I had met you, you know, shortly after that. And you were so gifted at seeing how pain has a memory. Like, yes, you can get through pain, but the memory is almost like an echo in the body that doesn't end. And so I could heal my knee, it could feel great, but then somebody could, you know, kick it or whack it or trip me by accident or something. And all of a sudden the pain and the memory comes back pretty quick. You never forget that pain, you know, even from the, and then you never, it somehow you get over it, but you never forget it. So it was a 6-month process of understanding how to listen to pain and follow it. So I would have to straighten my knee. That was the gift. Or my knee was bent at a, you know, at a 90 degree angle. I had to get it flat, but I also had to get it the other way. Like I had to get it, you know, this way. So it was like this. I had to straighten it, but I also had to do it on the back end. So there was, so that range of motion took 6 months, mm-hmm. you know, and that was a long time. And that, that process of saying, okay, this is the pain I want. This is the pain I don't want. This is the pain that's too much. This is the pain I've got to go through. And at the time I was upset at that, right? Like you're angry, but now I see it as a blessing. It mm-hmm. taught me so much about how to follow pain. It really did. It taught me a lot about pain and hence the nature of this podcast. And since then, no matter what problem I have, no matter what pain I have, I follow that. I understand the sequence that I have to go through. And about, I think it was 5 years ago, I had busted this forearm. I remember that when it was just a fluke thing. And the bone here had broken. It was complete break. It was the crack. It was a, what they call a nightstick fracture. So it was completely, the ulna was completely, it was gapped. And the doctors at the time wanted me, and there was a lot of pain. As you can imagine this, Bill.
Yeah.
I break this. In the first 10 minutes of a martial art class, I am teaching. Nobody sees it. No, it was that my, the moment it happened, I knew something was not right. I finished the entire class. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew. I went home. Okay. You'd imagine this. I'm still teaching. This is completely broken. Okay. Nobody knows. I am not walking around. I am active in the class.
Uh-huh.
So I am dealing with the pain as it's happening because the pain is intensifying. But I'm working through the pain and using my training to get through that. Then I get home, but I don't go to the hospital right away, Bill. I go home first because I know from my experience that me at a hospital when I'm hungry is not a good thing. So I have to get home. I open up the door. I see my wife. I said, hello, honey. She goes, how are you? I think I've broken my arm. She goes, really? I go, yeah. I go, aren't you going to go to the hospital? I go, well, let me have some dinner first because I could be there for a while and I don't want to be hungry. Because if I'm hungry, then bad decisions happen. So I finished my dinner. I went to the hospital and found my injury as to what it was. And it's such a funny story because how I handled the pain the second time with this arm as compared to my knee was night and day. Mm-hmm. I was so calm. I talked to the doctor. The surgeons wanted to operate and put pins in it. I said, you know, what are the other options? He goes, well, there's a 20% chance you could heal this on your own, but we don't really recommend it. I said, how about we try that? Can we try that? I'm just curious to see if I, okay, I'm willing to do it for 3 weeks. I knew the difference between good and bad pain. And I followed that along and believe me that every time the you know, not to get a talking rant here, but it was really funny because it was the same surgeon that met with me through the whole process. And every time he was scratching his head, he was like, okay, well, I'm willing to try it if that's what you want. So, and when I came back, he did an x-ray after 3 weeks and looked at me, said, I actually do see some healing here. I actually see that the I can actually see, I got the x-rays to prove it all. Mm-hmm. I got the x-ray. So then he goes, okay, let's give it another couple of weeks. So I come back in a couple of weeks. He goes, yeah, no, it's healing up. He goes, you know what? I'm going to put you in a half cast. And he goes, be prepared. Your arm's going to be at a 90 degrees and it won't be able to straighten. He goes, so what I want you to do is for an hour a day, and then I said a half hour twice a day, take it off and just try to straighten it. And he goes, don't force it. He goes, I want you to try to get to 45 degrees in the next 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I said, sure. 2 weeks for 45. He goes, oh yeah, yeah. Go slow. Be super careful. I said, sure. No problem. I got home and of course it's stiff, right? It's stiff, of course, and I'm ginger with it. But I said to myself, I go, I got to speed this up, man. I know this pain. This is not the bad pain. This is the pain that my arm wants to straighten, right?
Yeah.
So I fall asleep at night and I say to myself, I wonder how I could do this. I wonder how I could make the most of my sleep. So what I did was I propped up pillows here. I propped up pillows here and I slept like this, Bill. If you guys can see my arm, I slept like that on my back with my arm up. And in the morning when I woke up, guess where my arm was? It was here. And the next morning it was here. Right. And in 2 weeks, I show up to my surgeon's office. He goes, okay, how is it going? How's, you know, did you get the 45 degrees? I go, I took it off. You mean like that? And I just straightened my arm. Yeah. He's like, how did you do that? I did it when I was sleeping. And I go, doc, I know the difference between good and bad pain. I go, I wasn't hitting my forearm. I wasn't hitting the bone. I was just stretching the muscles. He was beside himself, though. There was really, it was an experiment. And I guess what I'm encouraging everybody listening is it's not going to happen overnight to understand this. But try in your everyday life to understand the pain that is guiding you and the pain that should stop you. Mm-hmm. That's a normal, right?
Go ahead. Yeah, I want to back up because you've brought up good, knowing the difference between good and bad pain a couple of times. And I'm familiar with it, but how would you make that distinction between good and bad pain? How would someone that's listening to it, that's been in pain for a long period of time, or they've just had an injury, they've maybe had similar conversations with their doctor. How do you make that distinction between good and bad pain that they could begin to translate into their lives, into their bodies?
So great question. And this is going to be hard, but I'm going to try to explain it in different analogies. How do we know when a food is bad? Sometimes you can look at it. Sometimes you can smell it. And sometimes you can even taste it, that something is really wrong, right? Mm-hmm. It just, things don't, like, so when you have to look at pain, and we luckily through our lives, we have enough experiences. So touching the iron, you pretty much know that pain, the burn pain, is not a good one, right? Mm-hmm. That's not a pain I think I'll ever be able to kind of understand is good, right?
Right.
This is something that's inherent to us, right? That we have, like in the wild, an animal is born. There's nobody teaching it that animal eats it and that animal doesn't. Mm-hmm. You just, it's a feeling that I got to run right now. Nobody said, that's the wolf and you got to run.
Yeah.
So a pain that, like the pain of that I'm cold, you know, like I feel cold and I put on a jacket, right? And that, like, it's kind of like that. I find that the good pain is milder and the sharper pain is the one that you can't kind of get through, right? Mm-hmm. So if my back locks up, let's say, you know, every once in a while I'll sleep wrong, I can feel there's pain in my back. I know that's a pain. It's not severe. It's just pain that I need. And if I start moving slowly and follow the pain, I can release my back. Sharp that I know I can't release. To get some acupuncture or get a good chiro or an osteo to work with me, right? That just takes time. And I'll propose this to as a question to all the people watching. What else do you have to do with your life, like, other than know yourself, other than understand? Because pain is how we learn things. We learn through what pains you and what pleasures you. Those are the two extremes, right? Not avoid it. Like, you know, it's not, but understand it. Just get curious. How did that happen? Like, you know, remember a while ago I told you about martial artists should be like scientists, right? We should not be so judgmental, right? As we get older, we should be less judgmental and more curious. Like, when I see a bad thing, I'm not mad at it. I mean, I might a little bit, but generally I'm curious. How did this happen? Like, how did you get like this? And you realize that the reasons are kind of sad sometimes when you see that, right? They're not like, I'm sure when you see a person, you know, you're not sitting there go, oh, you're more curious as to how this happened. You want to understand the root causes of it, right? So when everybody listening, that's where Bill is really gifted. You ask really good questions and you get interested rather than judgmental. We should all, when you have pain in your body, be interested, because it's a warning sign. Mm-hmm. Something is not right. And you know, like, and that's how you got to approach it. That it's not, oh, don't do it. It's no. If you have that pain, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. What were the things, right? Much like a doctor, when you show up with a problem, they're like, they're just asking questions because they're curious as to how that would have happened. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
yeah, that's something when I work with clients, it is, we have to switch the mentality or the paradigm of looking at pain as being bad and looking at pain as being information. What is our body trying to tell us? What are the codes and the signals and the clues? Like you were saying, I really love the analogy about food. If it's bad, you could tell if you smell it or if you taste it or if you just look at it. Those are different distinctions. And this is what I hear you saying exactly about pain. We have to, instead of shying away from it, be curious about it and begin to pick it apart. And like, well, how does it feel when I move this way or that way? How is this connected to other parts of my body? Yeah. So that was brilliant. I love it. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Pain Education Corner. If you have a special talent or skill to relieve pain and you'd like to become a guest on our show, visit us at thecamellafoundation.org/interview. Help us spread the word on eliminating pain and suffering in the world. That's thecamellafoundation.org/interview.
What's also good too for somebody to see, if you go to get a really good massage, and I want, so all these, if your listeners and are wanting a way to kind of understand this, go to get what some people call as a deep tissue massage, right? Go get a massage. And a massage therapist, especially a really good one, understands where your tension is and will start to kind of go into that. And you're going to feel pain. Okay. When my massage therapist works on me, anybody listening, guys, I am trying to crawl off the table. It is so painful. It is. And my therapist is great. He knows exactly the pain that I need to feel. Because if it doesn't hurt for me, I'm not doing anything because my tension will be quite deep. And so I want to work at this. I don't want to just feel good. I want to work at getting rid. And you know how good I feel after, Bill? I feel like I'm 16. It's amazing. And so if you want to understand the difference between good and bad pain, go to a good massage therapist, one that really, you know, especially deep tissue stuff, and you will feel pain. And that is the good pain because they know they'll push into that pain and you need to deal with it. Now, we can't just ask people to deal with pain. Like, how are you going to deal with it, right? And me, you and me, we approach it the same way. We have to, you know, how are you going to deal with pain? If you're not going to drink, if you're not going to do drugs, if you're not going to take pills, how do you deal with pain as it comes? So for me, I've always taught breathing and relaxation. Mm-hmm. So when I feel pain, you know, years ago, when a woman was going into labor before the epidural, they taught the Lamaze. It was breathing and relaxation techniques. And around the world where there is no, medicine for pain, that's the way they handle it. So we need to look at those things and everybody needs to say to them, I don't want you just to suffer senselessly. I want you to understand that when you feel pain, try to breathe it out, try to relax as much as you can and take it from a 10 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10 to like a 6 out of 10. You're not going to get rid of it completely. It's just going to be more bearable. Mm-hmm. And that's a gateway to understanding how to deal with pain. And then when it's bearable, you can say, like you explained, listen to the signal. Mm-hmm. Listen to the frequency and to that signal. It's telling you something. It's not just saying, it's saying this is a potential wrong, mm-hmm. right? This is a potential wrong. So mm-hmm. that's the way I kind of see it.
I made some notes for the call today. And okay. there's some, the background that we both share is in the Russian martial arts systema. And one in the breathing background that is what we use to begin to reduce the pain in our training or personal life or life, whatever that is, life in general. One of the things that came to mind when you were speaking before was learning how to suffer well. And I don't remember where it came from. I just did, you know, we draw back on decades of experience and all of a sudden it's like where did it come from? But I know there's this understanding of suffering well. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Well, listen, it comes down to a philosophy. I mean, it can be, I mean, I guess if I had to try dig as far back as I could say, I've seen it in Stoic belief systems where, so what fears you? What are you scared of? You're scared of being hungry? Fast a little bit. Are you scared of being cold? Go into the cold, right? If you're scared of, not having or being poverty, go live on the street for a day. Like, just go see what it is, right? And by going down it, you take the mystery out of it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's also many spiritual beliefs and religious beliefs that will tell you that life is suffering. Now, that's not to be sad. That's just that you're going to suffer and you're going to be happy. So when your things are really good, don't be overly happy. Just be happy. And when things are really bad, don't be overly sad. Just kind of, stay close to that and understand that everybody suffers. There's something. It doesn't matter how much money or what background you are. Everybody has problems. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And when we take that approach, we realize that suffering is just a part of life. It's just part of it. It's just like life and death. I mean, it's a part of it. It is a part of it. And today on that level is echoes to me for sure, right? So these are things that are important for people to understand, not to push away from or hide. Just accept them. That I try to be good, guys, but things happen to me too, right? I didn't want to bust up my knee. I didn't want this. I didn't want that. We all have our trials and tribulations. And when they happen, just suffer good. Doesn't mean pretend it doesn't exist. Acknowledge it. Like when you're sad, it's okay to say I'm sad. It's okay. When you're angry, it's okay to say you're angry. It's just a form of suffering and you're trying to get through it. So I guess by acknowledging everybody suffers and just make as much as you can of that, like take the lesson from it. What did this teach you rather than why did it happen? Mm-hmm. And then maybe you can reduce repeating it again. Mm-hmm. I always accept in life that things don't make sense at that moment. Like when I hurt my knee, I was so angry that it happened to me. I really was. Now, let's say 5 or 10 years later, I say to myself, if I didn't have that injury, I wouldn't have learned these 10 things. Mm-hmm. And they've been invaluable to me in life. So when things happen to you, like a suffering, say to yourself, they're trying to teach you something for the future that will be invaluable. Mm-hmm. It'll be absolutely invaluable. So if you take that approach or that methodology, a very Stoic belief system, I guess, where you embrace suffering rather than damn it. Mm-hmm. Like you try to take the good from it, which is, for those listening, probably advice I would give my kids. Like it's very personal advice. Mm-hmm. It's very personal advice. It's not something that is, it's easy to talk about with everybody, but it is still very important advice to give people. And so suffer good.
Yeah. Right?
suffer good. Suffer good.
Breathe. Yeah. And this ties in well with a lot, and I've seen it in myself, I've seen it in clients that I've worked with. People will say, well, I'm in pain. They'll lump it together. They're not looking at it as a learning tool. And they'll look at pain as like the self-abuse, that I feel pain and they can go down that path of just, well, I'm just going to abuse myself because, well, I'm going to feel pain anyways. And then you have the other direction of people they never want to go near pain. It's what you were talking about. If you're afraid of being impoverished, live on the street for a day, or hungry, not having food, go hungry for a little bit.
Yeah.
So this was a lesson for me in terms of strikes with systemic.
Yeah.
There was this, when I first started, I always wanted to get hit. And I realized that it was the teachings that I got was, it was more out of wanting to get hit for self-abuse to see how much I could take. Not that I was using it as the movement that I needed forward in my own personal evolution. So I think it's a rich topic because it also ties in with going to the massage therapist and having them, you know, kind of get in there and do that. There's a distinction with good pain and bad pain, self-abuse and the fear of never going towards pain. And I know that that's a lot of different thoughts in there, but there's gems in that that I'd like you to speak to if you would.
So I think what you're talking about is, it's very hard to self-analyze yourself. It's very hard. I mean, you can self-teach yourself a lot of things, but you do need to surround yourself with some good mentors, people that can guide you. So, because, you know, I'll give you an example. I can make a martial art video and I can look at it and say, wow, look how amazing this is, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And then I show it to somebody that says, what the hell are you doing? Look at this. You know, like, so,
right.
It's really funny. Like, I have students will send me videos all the time and about some work they're doing. And I look at it and then I grab my daughter and I always just say, how does this look to you? And she'll look at it. She goes, it looks stupid or it looks bad. And then, and I'm like, sorry to tell you, but she's my filter or other friends are my filter.
Right.
Anything I ever think about doing is I always try to bounce it off people that I really respect. And to guide me down this road, right? And surround myself with mentors and try to understand the difference between mentors and tormentors. And you want to surround yourself with mentors. Okay. And there is a they're very close together, those two. And if you can look at the definition, people can research it itself. But the mentors that I have, the people that truly are happy for me when I'm successful. These are the people that you need to surround yourself with. And guys, if you don't have them, people listening, go find them. They're out there, right? Yeah. They're out there. And those are the people that you follow. So like the strikes, it was very natural for me to like you, Bill, I wanted to take the strikes. It was like a rite of passage. It was like a bravado and ego. But fast forward 10, 15 years after that, if somebody punched me towards the stomach or chest, I just went away. I took, because I realized, what can one strike teach me? What does 30 strikes teach me that one can't? I can learn from one right away. I don't need to have 30,
right?
I don't need to be buckled over, rolling around in pain. Like, you know, do we need to die to understand to take care of our health? No. Mm-hmm. You could just say to yourself, I want to be healthy.
Right.
But that motivation of like, oh my God, you're going to die from the doctor. And then, you know, a day later saying, no, sorry, I was wrong. I was reading the wrong chart. If that did it to you, if that made you realize how important that was, then great. But you don't need that to improve yourself. So I would encourage people to surround yourself with good mentors because, you know, if it doesn't sound right, it's no good, right? Like strikes is one way. Another way I use pain, if you guys want to understand good pain, is the cold water dousing, right? That's not going to kill you. Just go outside. You know, the neighbors might think you're a little crazy, but even if you go outside in the cold, like say some real cold temperature, and just for 2 minutes.
At night.
Please don't start mowing your lawn. That would be the worst. I really think you're crazy. Well. But if I just go outside in the cold with, like, let's say a t-shirt and shorts. Okay. Now, again, we're talking minus 10 now. So it's pretty cold weather. And just stay out there for 2 minutes. You won't die.
Right.
You'll be cold and you'll get inside. And guess what'll happen is your body will respond positively. I can guarantee you. Mm-hmm. For those of you that think that fasting for one day, not eating anything for a day, just having some water, you know, maybe a tiny bit of juice or something. How much more energy you're gonna have. Suffering things only will make you stronger. So start small, fast for 16 hours. And if that goes good, try a day, right? You won't die, guys. I know people that do. My grandmother used to fast for 40 days, right? 40 days, Bill, she only eat fruits and vegetables for 40 days, right? And many days she didn't eat healthier than you could believe. Cold water, that was guru on this is Wim Hof. Like, look at what he's doing with cold water. There's nothing but health benefits. Now, I wouldn't start that extreme. You could progressively go to that. Both those things, hunger, pain, and pain. It's a pain. It doesn't matter, right? Where I really find my training goes to a different level is when I go to the dentist. That's an interesting one, guys, because oral pain, like when the dentist is picking in your, you know, with needles and pins, that is really hard to stay calm. And it's amazing. I'm sitting right there and I'm that hour that I'm at the dentist and he's cleaning my teeth and he's touching sensitive parts, I'm lying there and I realize I'm relaxed, but my toes are like this. Like, mm-hmm. You realize how the pain is bouncing to other parts of my body, right? Mm-hmm. So I use that time for training. That's my pain training, because that's the pain I really don't like, even though I know it won't kill me. So take every opportunity for those listening. There's going to be pains in our life, and try to kind of get to know them and find the root causes of them. And the ones that won't kill you, try to go deeper into them, but take the benefits. Don't do it for ego, like you were saying with punches, right? You're right. Like, what is the source of this? If the source makes you a better person, you'll know, because when I fast the next day, I'm like, I have so much energy, Bill. I feel great. When I go through the cold water or cold exposure, I feel spectacular. Mm-hmm. I feel so healthy. I don't feel angry. I feel calm. I don't feel sick. I feel healthy. I use my body as a barometer of sensing. You know, if I eat something, like, guys, anybody know, if you have a really shitty pizza, next day you feel shitty. Like, it's just how it is. If you're around a person that's annoying, you know, because you feel agitated. Your body is communicating, pain being maybe an extreme version, but it's so communicating with you. So communicating. Sure.
A lot of times I think by the time we're at the pain point, we've ignored for a long time. Like, it's it for me. Well, you know my story. I dislocated my left knee 4 times. Yeah. I didn't get it the first 3. So it was that continuing to push and ignore and stick my head in the sand. And it's like, oh, I'll be fine. And then finally it gets to a point where it's like my body couldn't be ignored anymore. It's going to knock loud enough until you're having that crisis in your life where it has to be paid attention to.
Yeah. Well, it was only in Sistema that the gift of self-reflection was given to me. Like, other arts talked about it, but they never dwelled into it deeply. So the real gift of Sistema to me is that it asks students to kind of get to know themselves. And when you do that, you can listen to pride and ego, anger and love and hate and pain. It what some people watching it might seem maybe barbaric or confusing to people, but in real life, you need to be ready for the good things and the ugly things. You need both to survive. Mm-hmm. You can't just be surrounded with good things. Life is not like that. You need to understand how it really works. It has its ups and downs, and we have to be ready for the ugly stuff. We have to be ready for the beautiful stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And both are evident, you know. So I encourage people to kind of make sure that they're looking at those things and seeing it from the big picture. Pain is just, it's no different than joy. It's just a different expression. Mm-hmm. You know, it has, joy has many things to teach you, and so does pain. You know, maybe not one you like, but it's still teaching you something. You know, this is important, right?
Right. I have a note here about examples. You've been teaching martial arts for decades and was curious if there's anything that in your observation of students, how they trip themselves up when training with pain.
Well, they do it to themselves. Like you said, the signs are there. They're just not listening. There were signs that my knee was not stable before, because the way I was working out was I was overdeveloping one part of my knee. And then a perfect storm happened when there was a collision and the knee was forced to support all my body weight. And at which point it wasn't stable and it blew the way that it was lacking support. So think of your body as a bridge. Like, think of, you know, those suspension bridges. Mm-hmm. If you go and loosen one of those cables, the bridge is not secured now. That, like, your body is full of muscles, and if you're not equally stretching and strengthening all those, then under some pressure, that's going to break. That's just how that works, right? So training should what I love to do when I'm teaching students is when I put them through a series of exercises, not just to get stronger, but so that they see where the weaknesses are in their body. Mm-hmm. And then now, and I talk to them about fixing those weaknesses and you give them some solutions. So a good teacher should kind of, I guess, not tell you what to do, but kind of shine a light in those dark spots where you might want to look at. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't force somebody to do something. But, you know, talking about my journey and the pitfalls opens up for other students as well to feel that way. So making sure that we communicate that nobody comes perfect to martial arts. Nobody comes perfect to life. We need to, it's a constant refinement process, right? So training should not just be about bettering another person. That doesn't make me happy. Yeah, okay, sure, I can wrestle with somebody and beat them a little bit, but that might not be my main goal. Mm-hmm. My main goal might be in a wrestling exchange to realize that I've held my breath and I've upset myself, mm-hmm. right? The main goal, like about 2 years ago, I love riding my bike. I like getting out and doing some cycling. And I realized that I really love cycling for an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. Anything after that, Bill, it annoys me. Mm. I get mad at myself. I don't know why. I just get mad. I'm like, I feel there's got to be something better to do with my life than this. Right. Like, I can't, like, why am I doing, like, so I love it. And I realized, because a lot of road cyclists, they love, oh, I'm going for 3 hours or 4 hours. I'm going to do 100 kilometers. I'm like, but my body's happy at an hour and a half. Why do I want to push into this uncomfortable place? Mm-hmm. Like, I love wrestling with somebody to understand movement and breathing and effort and sweat and feel healthy. If I get to the point where I'm trying to beat another person, it upsets me a little bit because I don't need it. There's no purpose for this to me. I have no purpose. I'm not trying to win the UFC. I'm not trying to, right. I don't want to build ego, because I find when I start doing that, you build ego. I would sooner train and push myself in a different way than do that. So everybody makes their own decisions, and you want to make sure that whatever you're doing, whether it's cycling or martial arts or tennis or golf, how many golfers have I seen angry? I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. Because they're just so trying to be the next PGA star. And I just hate to tell them, you're not going to be the next PGA star, guys.
Right.
Why don't you take golf as a wonderful walk, fresh air, and a skill that takes a long time to develop, and just enjoy it. Enjoy that process. I mean, and stop being happy when you make a good shot and sad when you make a bad shot. How about you just enjoy the outdoors? Mm-hmm. And that perspective takes a while to fix. So I try to look at students and make sure that I'm shaping their perspective, not necessarily a specific skill set. If you got the right perspective, I mean, life is easy. Mm-hmm. I don't need to tell you what job to do. It's like the perspective that you need to have. Like, make sure, and this comes down to mood, because if you're happy, you're probably more likely to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? If you're agitated, you're probably not going to do it for long, right? So this is a real tricky point when you're teaching students and when you're guiding people, is to, what makes them happy?
Yeah.
That's really important. That's really important.
It almost, and what I'm resonated with myself is finding that calm baseline, like creating this calm baseline in your life. And a lot of times we aren't surrounded by those people that create that calm baseline. Yeah. We're surrounded by people that are actually instigating and causing discomfort or disharmony in our baseline. And then we're acting out. And I've seen that in my life in the past, acting out in ways that are working out that irritation in the neurology, in our nervous system, in our bodies.
Yeah.
And then the pain is a result of figuring out that that doesn't work so well sometimes.
Yeah. So the way I might explain it to people that maybe they can material, if you take a piece of paper and, you know, just look long way and draw a line down the middle. Okay. That line should represent your, like, not happy, not sad, like right in the middle. That's like, so I'm just content. Mm-hmm. I'm not overly happy. I'm not overly sad. I'm just content. And our life, for the most part, should go above that sometimes, below it a little bit, above that. But my compass is always towards the middle. Mm-hmm. Like if I get too happy and things are good, I always kind of look towards the middle. I don't get too happy. Mm-hmm. And when I start to get sad, I don't go to the, I go, it always guides me to the middle, because the middle is, I find I make my best decisions in the middle. You know, when you're too happy, you kind of do things that you shouldn't do. And when you're too sad, you do things you shouldn't do too, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, think of eating, guys. I always come back, because eating is one of those subconscious things, right? When everything is just fine in life, you tend to, you don't crave the sugar. You don't crave those comfort foods. And you're just in a good place. I don't overeat. I tend to eat the right foods. Now, that doesn't mean that in life I can't get overly excited. Like, let's say up is really happy. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't stay there. It's not that I don't like being happy, but I understand that you don't live there. You're always kind of in the middle somewhere. I really enjoy that. I just find that the middle ground is where you make your best decisions. You make your soundest decisions, and vice versa. Whenever I go real down in pain or maybe get angry or upset, I might be there, but I'm always looking to that middle. I'm always, that's kind of, so think of a car that's kind of got out of control. I'm not looking at the ditch. They tell you in driving to look where you want to go, and the car gets pointed there, right? So it's like, I'm always looking to the middle, because I find that that's the place that you can be, make an honest reflection of yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, this is who I really am, right? This is really good, right? So try to gear yourself that life will move left, it will move right, it will move up, it will move down, but look in the middle. That's really mm-hmm. where you want to, your compass should be kind of always lead you back. Mm-hmm. It always kind of, so we can go off this course, but we're always kind of pointed down that road. This way you find you'll be in better harmony with life. So mm-hmm. it's real harmony, right? It's like, what do we preach? You know, give and take in life, right? Like, I get energy, but I don't hold it. I give it. That's what mm-hmm. we're doing right now, right? I'm sharing my energy and my time with viewers, and hopefully they get some energy of sorts, and that they want to give it out to people. We live in harmony in this world. We give and we take. We don't just give, or we don't just take, right? Mm-hmm. So important to be in that. So if that might help people understand that you're always guided into that middle direction. So I'm just content, which is so good. Just so mm-hmm. perfect. It's so important to have. Yeah. I hope that helps.
Yeah, no, I think it's fantastic. And I think it's a good place to tie this up. Manny, do you think we can get a breath training or something that we could put up on the site?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a video. I've got a series. It's about like 5 or 6, 10 or 15 minute clips of me kind of walking somebody through some basic breathing that is just, it's a starting point. It's just a starting point. It's not meant as a something you do for the next 10 years, you know. Try it, let it guide you. And I tell people, if for change to happen, 90 days is a good amount, like 3 months, and at 30 days they say to change a habit, but you need to start another one. And
right,
you know, yeah. So, you know, I always look at it like, if I was a bodybuilder, I would need 12 weeks to see an adaptation. That's mm-hmm. that's the amount of time that a muscle can tear or repair, and you can start to see a result. So mm-hmm. that's the physical. So the psychological and the internal stuff will take that long too. So life, what's 90 days in relation to your life? Mm-hmm. You know, if you can just practice breathing for 10 minutes a day, that's all, just 10 minutes a day, it'll make a huge difference. I can definitely sure, that'd be great.
Perfect. And Manny, how could someone get in touch with you? Well, I'll have all this information in the show notes of this, but would someone be able to reach out to you?
Website. My website has as my phone number. It has my email address. That's probably the best way to start. I mean, and okay. More information is there. I mean, there's just never been a time in our history where it's easier to connect with people. It's so good to connect, and we should take advantage of that for sure. Sure. Yeah, I'm definitely reachable.
Okay. Well, I'll include all of that in the show notes. Manny, I want to thank you so much for being here. It was great having you here. And so we're going to wrap this up. This is Bill Parravano, the Knee Pain Guru, going to end this edition of the Pain Education Podcast brought to you by the Comello Foundation. To learn more about the work we do at the Comello Foundation, please visit our website at the Comello, C-O-M-E-L-L-A, foundation.org. Join us next week for another conversation on natural healing methods to eliminate pain.